A January evening. Jack Simmons walks from the train station to his home. It's only 6 o'clock, but the winter hours made it as dark as full night. It's just stopped raining, and the glow of the town sets the roadways alive, fantasy lights glinting in the gloom. It's a journey he takes every day. He's oblivious to the people walking past him, lost in the music blasting between his ears. I could see all this from where I sat in my car. He begins the climb up the hill towards his flat, and I twist around to check on the bag I've carefully laid on the back seat. I watch him pass the taxi place with its blazing neon sign, and then I turn on the engine. I drive past him without a glance. I know that if I park my car just after the church, he will be visible in a few minutes. Sure enough, there he is, all swagger and indifference. I put him at about 6'2", after comparing some of the photographs I'd taken. Taller than me, but that had never been a problem before. He passes in front of my car, not 10 feet away from me. He never knew I was there. He has never looked at me once. The first time I saw him, he was in a car and I was out. He was in the back of a black cab, fresh off his commute. I took one look at his face, and the song began, the song that is wretched, was also divine. The song that drives me to dance and leads me along until we both crescendo. I've tried to analyze my choices. What is it about them that triggers the music in my head? I have no answer there, and perhaps it's time I stopped questioning. That's funny. It's way past time to be questioning myself. I remember I noticed the shape of his ear. The right one, the one that faced me. It was completely attached to the side of his face with no hanging lobe at all. Then his nose, large and aquiline, giving his profile a strong, righteous air. The cab drove off as I stood there watching. It took 5 days of staking out the front of the station to catch him again. This time he left on foot, and I followed.
The library held thousands of books. I was lost in its depths, in a forest grove of alder. Chapter, paragraph, word, all conspired to overwhelm me. Before now, my selection had been naught but a random choice. As much chance of finding the right book as winning with a lottery ticket. After this, I would search far and wide, up, over, down, north against south, to discover the key.
I began to learn his routines and his rituals. His walk from the station to his home was the same every night, apart from on a Friday. Then he would take a cab to a pub on the other side of town, I drank with him once at the bar, my back towards his back. He ordered a Glenmorangie neat with a splash of water, and I copied him. I listened as he chatted with his two friends about sex, about politics, nothing consequential. I learnt that he liked to put down his so-called friends whenever he could. He always had the better story, the better answer to some trivial question. When he went to piss, his friends talked about him behind his back. Mostly, they complained.
Derek Dunnings,
Hour of the Dead.
And welcome back to the Hour of the Dead. My name is Derek Dunning, and I'm going to be with you here until the witching hour. Now, a lot of you have been waiting for our next guest for many weeks. We tried to get her on in December, but she pulled out at the last minute. Maybe we'll hear more about that right now. Joining us via phone is Hilly Sanderson, celebrated medium, and author of Spirited Discussions, My Life with Ginger. Hilly, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you, Derek. Thanks for having me on.
Well, our listeners have been writing in non-stop since your near appearance at Christmas. In fact, it was your disappearance at that time that they were so interested about. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, that's a complicated question, Derek. Firstly, let me apologise for missing that appointment. It was, shall we say, completely out of my control.
Well, what exactly happened, Hilly?
Well, I hadn't heard from Ginger in 3 weeks, which was very unusual for her. I've been increasing my meditation time in order to get back in touch, and I was in rather a deep trance state when I was taken over.
Taken over? Now, for listeners who don't know, Ginger is Hilly's spirit guide. What do you mean you were taken over?
I mean that a demonic entity from the other side laid claim to my earthly vessel.
I see. So, were you aware it was happening? Did you have any control?
I did begin to fight him at first, but he was able to cause me pain in the right-hand side of my head. I thought it best then to open up a dialogue and see what was what.
A dialogue?
Yes. We had a nice chat. He said I could call him Job. But that wasn't his real name, of course.
Ah, yes, that's right. If you remember our episode on exorcism, knowing a demon's true name is the ultimate weapon against him.
That's right. Well remembered, Derek. Job told me he'd been sent to carry out a mission. He had to find a priest and collect an item which was in his keeping. It all sounded like the plot to a bad horror film. But I said, hey ho, and he took charge of the bus, so to speak.
Three, one, 125. 13. 9, 108. 16, 4, 36. 13, 16, 27. 11, 46, 93. 13, 1, 5.
I wait until he's far enough away from me, and then I leave the car. I follow him from a distance. I wasn't scared of losing him. I knew where he lived, after all. I stop when he reaches his building. He fishes into his pocket for a moment, looking for his keys, maybe. Then he enters the doorway and vanishes from view. I must ready myself for what is to come. It's surprisingly easy to trick your way into a locked building. That part will be no trouble at all. The danger comes with the dance. We will both hear the song then. We will dance it together. Only his song will reach an end. I walk up to the door of his building. There is the usual row of doorbell buttons, and I carefully select one I know is not his. There's a short pause, and then a crackling voice says, "Hello?" I put on my most cheerful and polite voice. "I'm so sorry, I live downstairs in 1B. I've locked myself out. Could you buzz me in, please?" "No problem," the voice says. And the door. I know that he lives on the ground floor. There's a ding from the lift, and I scoot around the corner so I'm not seen. I hear someone leaving the building. When it's quiet, I find the corridor that leads to his front door.
And welcome back. I hope that that windy weather is not going to spoil your weekend plans. You're listening to Derek Dunning's Hour of the Dead. My guest, Hilly Sanderson, has been waiting patiently on the phone, and when we left her story, she had just been taken over by something from the other side.
Possessed, yes.
So, you would call it a possession?
Well, yes. What else would it be?
I suppose I have a more Hollywood view of what a possession is. No pea soup for you, then.
No. I forgot how funny you are, Derek.
And were you aware during this possession?
At first, yes. I had to help the poor thing find my car keys, and he couldn't drive at all. He was kind of a passenger inside me, inside the car, for a while. He was watching, though. After a few minutes, he got the hang of it and he pushed me out of the way.
And you went to see this priest?
Well, I assume we did. After about 20 minutes in the car, I must have passed out. I have no memory of the next 24 hours.
My God, Hilly, that is terrifying.
Well, yes. It was disconcerting, to say the least. And I wasn't very clean. The beast had left me a mile away from my car. It was an uncomfortable journey home, let me tell you.
And nothing more has come of it? Did you try to find the priest?
I didn't have much to go on. I've been left at the arse end of Merseyside, and you can't throw a fit in Liverpool for fear of hitting a priest. It's lousy with them.
That is quite a tale, Hilly, and one I am very glad that you lived through. Hilly is going to answer some of your questions right after this message.
There is a majesty to it, a dramatic melding of force and form. I move like a dancer, open wide one moment and intimate the next. It is a part of the song, and it runs through me like a wildfire. I knock on his door, standing in the gloom. I'd waited for the automatic lights to turn off so as to remain hidden. I hear shuffling sounds, and then a click as he turns the lock. He opens the door wide without a care. Light spills from his home and floods over me. He smiles for just a moment, and his lips begin to form a word, but then he senses something is wrong. Perhaps he can see the murder in my eyes. Maybe even he can hear the song now, in his last minutes on the earth. I take a strong step forward and push him hard in the middle of his chest. He flies backwards and crashes into the wall just beyond the hallway. He crumples, groaning, and then remembers I am there. He scrabbles towards one of the open doorways, and I follow him inside. I take in the layout of the room in an instant. It is predictably high-end, stark metal furniture and a glass coffee table. I make a note to avoid this. My goal is always not to make a mess. Extracting the media comes later. He is whimpering. Predictable. This kind pretended to be alpha male, but when the chips were down, they revert to subservience. I am still stood over him. He's making a small effort to crawl further into the room, but I place a foot on his back and push down hard. He yelps as his chin hits the hardwood floor. I slip a large cable tie from my back pocket and cinch his hands together cruelly. He starts to beg. I don't want him beneath me. I put my arms around his shoulders and yank him upwards. He can't dance if he's not on his feet. He is snivelling now. I turn him around to face me. Our noses almost touch. I ignore his tears and snot and look into his eyes. It is exquisitely intimate. And as I stare, he falls silent. The song rallies in my brain. I can hear nothing else. And from the look on his face, I know he hears it too. I hold him for the dance. My hands close around his neck. He is so shaken that I'm the only thing holding him up. His weight added to his own throttling. We move together. A controlled sway, back and forth, the last breath gurgling in his throat. I've positioned my hands in such a way as to cut off his air. Now comes the crescendo, the point of extremis. His body reacts to the lack of oxygen, fighting and twisting for breath. I hold him tightly, eager to match his technique with my own. The dance is always longer than I think. My hands are ready for this work, but the effort is extreme. After about a minute, sweat begins to pour from my head. He looks dead, but I know that if I stop, something inside him could kick him back to life. I continue to look into his eyes, now surrounded with skin the colour of a ripe plum. Another minute, and I know it's over. The music seems distant now, and soon it will be gone, for a while.
This is Al Ashworth, creator of the Strange Circle podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and invite you to visit the Strange Circle website for more facts, stories and clues. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would be very grateful if you could rate and review, especially on iTunes. If you're feeling generous, please sponsor me on Patreon. This podcast is a labour of love, and any help you can give is gratefully received. You can find all the information at pod.strangecircle.org. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. The wise men at their end no doubt is right, because their words had forked no lightning they. Do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last way, wild by, men who crying how bright the sun, their frail deeds might learn still a green day. Believed it on its rage, do rage not go gentle into the dying of the night. Men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, my father. To that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.